Hi, I'm one of the High Priests of Khonshu Rey, and I have the sacred privilege of providing you, the Loony Listener, with a podcast honouring Marvel's very own Moon Knight. So join me and a host of others at Into the Night, a Moon Knight podcast. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or support the show by becoming a Patreon member. Into the Night, a Moon Knight podcast. It's time to get your Khonshu on.
Hello, I'm Alan.
I'm Rebecca.
And welcome to the DCAU podcast. This week we are covering the DC Showcase.
Yes.
So,
which is all interesting stuff. Lots of new stuff for us.
Yeah. So the DC Showcase is a box set of four movies that came out in 2010 or 2011, I think. Which is effectively what happened was the last three Justice League film, well, the film Justice League Crisis on Two Earths, Batman Under the Red Hood, and Superman Batman Apocalypse, all three of them had a short movie introducing a character that maybe wasn't as popular to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And they were then released in a box set with Superman Shazam The Return of Black Adam. Between the four movies, it's about an hour and 2 minutes. They're actually available as a movie on YouTube, which it's not in the order that we're going to talk about it, but it is so
helpful.
But it is available. Alternatively, you can search for them all on the web because they're all available separately.
Yeah.
And at least one of them's legitimately out for free.
Which is that one? Just out of interest.
The Green Arrow one.
Okay, interesting.
The Green Arrow one is actually on, like, WB Buying the Lot, which I believe is also where Brainiac Attack was, when that's available for free.
I guess given they're so short and everything, it's kind of fun to give some access to them, especially if you're sort of testing the grounds to see if it's worth making a film.
Absolutely. And I have to say, With all four, I'd be interested to see a longer movie with them all.
Yes, that was my takeaway. And I'm like, if I enjoyed them so much, why didn't they ever make a better one?
I mean, to be fair, this is the same DC that went, well, the Wonder Woman movie didn't make as much money as we wanted it to, so we're not going to do a sequel to that, which...
It shows no investment in it.
Yeah.
Because quite often these things don't take off straight away, especially not when they're not the major, you know, the two characters people really do know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's telling that the first kind of Supergirl featuring film, Supergirl's not even in the title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I understand why, but it's kind of a shame.
Yeah. So we'll jump in first with The Spectre.
Yes.
Which is...
very short.
It's a very... it's 11 minutes featuring the... well, is he a hero or is he an anti-hero? Because obviously he's a guy who kills people.
I think a little bit of an anti-hero from what I know of him, which is very little. Although I do have a Spectre memorial comic, so...
so it's... so The Spectre is set in Hollywood. It opens with the murder by bomb of a film director, film producer?
Mm-hmm.
Who I don't even know that we get the name of. We certainly get the name of his daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
And as the case is being investigated, a very noir-esque detective shows up. It's strange. It's set... it's kind of got this kind of 60s, 70s feel.
It's definitely sort of Wild West 70s feel, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's all in a kind of weird sepia tone.
I mean, it's one of the things I actually like about... we'll talk about it as they go on, is that they all have a distinct feel.
Absolutely.
And this very much comes out with that distinct noir. Is you're right, you're plunged immediately into a cross between cowboys and... straight into the noir sort of scene,
yeah.
Sorry.
We're greeted by Jim Corrigan, who is not actually assigned the case, but mm-hmm. he has a relationship or had a relationship with the, let's say, producer's daughter, Amy.
Yeah.
So he's investigating it, and so we do get some camera footage of, because no one saw anything, but there was a camera showing two men sneaking around the pool.
Yes. It was very, very convenient.
Yeah. And we then open to a special effects studio where mm-hmm. the guy's working on his projects late at night, and all of a sudden he's confronted by a ghost.
Or a spectre.
Yes. So the guy first appears as the ghost of the producer,
mm-hmm.
and then turns into the spectre, which... Was the spectre made before or after Doctor Doom was a major character? Because there's a very similar
vibe. I don't know, but I would guess that Doom is older.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But that might be my Marvel bias coming out there.
Aye.
I just think that the Fantastic Four is like... That's the problem. I think the Fantastic Four is like one of the really old Marvel ones, but the Spectre could be a really old DC thing. I don't know. Like, I know the Spectre has been around a while, but I just don't know.
Mm-hmm. The Spectre then confronts the effects guy, and then uses the creatures from the effects shop to kill him. He gets him chased by vampires and zombies, and then the guy goes downstairs and forgets that he has a giant King Kong animatronic.
Mm-hmm.
Which, to be fair, I didn't expect to see King Kong in this film.
No. It's fun stuff. I enjoyed it. It's good. Although this was probably my least favourite of them, but that might be just...
Yeah.
It seemed very middle... Very... Very straightforward.
Yeah. We then, because it's a cop drama, we need to have the angry chief.
Mm-hmm.
So the angry chief is coming in and going, I'm not even going to kick you off the case because you shouldn't be on the case to start with. But someone's killing all our suspects, so investigate that.
Yes.
Cut to a stunt guy who is going to run away in his car. He's running for the border.
Yes, it's a good car.
Yep. And, well, unfortunately for him, the Spectre does not have jurisdiction.
Damn it.
So, the Spectre attacks, causes the car to crash.
Mm.
The guy obviously wasn't wearing a seatbelt because he goes through the front window.
Which is why you should wear a seatbelt.
Yes, you should absolutely wear a seatbelt because you never know when you're going to be hanging through your seatbelt, looking at the looking underneath you at the passenger side door. Just for the record, I had a car crash about 3 weeks ago.
Yes, poor Alan.
Yeah, it was fun. Thankfully, yeah. Everyone walked away, and that's what's important.
That's what really matters, but yes, it makes you even more aware of the awfulness of car crashes.
And how often car crashes are depicted in films.
A lot, right?
Yeah. What then happens is the Spectre then repairs the car, and it chases the stuntman around.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And eventually he manages to basically get the car to drop itself on top of the stuntman.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which is, again, pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. We then cut to Amy being confronted by Corrigan.
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't you know it, Corrigan's the Spectre.
Da, da, da.
I mean, it's almost like we had 11 minutes and we had to somehow get a twist in there.
But it is, I mean, it is one of the cool things about the character, is uh-huh. that sort of tie to Corrigan, but yeah.
So, Corrigan goes, I know it was you, Amy.
Yeah, I was there, I was watching, mate.
And Amy tries to shoot him, and we get the bullets just passed through him and hit the window instead. And then we get the death that I think makes this a 15.
Oh, is this one a 15? Interesting.
Yes, this or the well, one of the four is a 15, and I'm assuming it's this one because they don't other film where someone
this would definitely be the one.
Is paper cutted to death by a money tornado?
It was amazing. Things you don't realise when you see money tornadoes in other cartoons. They're very sharp. It's like the fact that a lot of pirates were killed by splinters.
Absolutely, yeah. The more you can look at it, the more aesthetically I look at it, the more I go, oh, this is meant to be like a 70s exploitation horror film almost.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
We then have Corrigan ghost away in a ghost car onto the next case that he's randomly going to appear on.
Yes, which we don't really get because I think this is probably it for him, right?
Yes, I don't think the Spectre shows up in anything else. Certainly not kind of featured. I mean, the only other things that I've kind of seen them in was stuff like, I'm sure he shows up in Injustice when it's kind of ghost themed.
Right, right. Oh yeah. Well, that's in the comic book, not in the film. Yeah, I've read the comic, but I don't really remember. I mean, like, so much happens in the comic.
There was talk of a TV series in 2011 that never went through. He appears in The Brave and the Bold, voiced by Mark Hamill.
Oh, cool.
He shows up in Smallville in one episode, in a painting in the background. Jim Corrigan appears in Constantine.
Oh, right.
The TV series, not the film.
Yes, he does. You're right. Sorry.
A version of the Spectre appears in the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover of the Arrowverse.
Really? I didn't pay enough attention to it, clearly. I watched it, but yeah, I would not have pay enough attention.
We won't say who the Spectre is in that version of the stories, but because that's a major spoiler. But suffice to say, it's a major
character. Oh, actually,
I
do remember now. Yeah.
And he also appears in Teen Titans Go to the Movies.
Huh, I saw that. I don't have very much recollection of it, though. Interesting. All these Spectre appearances I've seen and missed at the same time.
So he has appeared in a few bits and pieces, but this is kind of the one and only time he's kind of the main character.
Yeah. Which is kind of a shame. This would actually be a good TV show for them.
Yeah.
Because you can make it procedural.
Yeah, you can make
it. Because he's not a superhero. So, I mean, he's because he's also a detective.
Yeah.
But he's not Batman. He's not the world's greatest.
I mean, with the kind of 70s styling, you could even do, actually, that would be awesome, a police procedural with the Question and the Spectre.
Yeah, it would be great.
There you go. I hope a DC executive's listening to this, and if they
I'm
do
sure
give us,
they are.
So anyway, we'll move on to the next film, which so we're doing this in release order, which was next up is Jonah Hex.
All right, so that's the one I kept meaning when I said Wild West. I see I'm already getting confused.
Yeah.
But yes, so I apologise.
No,
but it's Jonah Hex.
I mean, they're both both of them are very, very much meant to exist in a time period. So the Spectre's obviously kind of the 70s, and there's even stuff like they have that kind of artificial film graining in the main credits.
Both seem like period pieces.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I just got confused, which is fine.
That's fine. It's understandable. You're watching four movies that are very
different.
Yeah,
I did watch them
succession.
All this morning, so that's my bet.
Yeah. So, Jonah Hex is a Western film, which is, again, about 11 minutes long. And we open with a man riding into town. And if you don't know he's a bad guy, he shoots a dog.
Yeah, that's immediate. Maybe that's why he got the high rating. No. Yeah, that's the immediate sign. You kill a dog,
yep,
you're already an issue.
The man enters the tavern, the saloon, and it's the stereotypical kind of man enters, the piano stops, and everyone stares.
It's kind of beautifully tropey.
Yeah.
But I think it helps when you've only got an, and I guess with the Spectre as well, when you have something that atmospheric, it helps if you've only, because if you've only got 11 minutes for the story, to be able to set it up very quickly with these known,
like
tropiness.
Yes, it means you can shortcut.
Yeah, right. You can shortcut so much just by, this is a Western, by the music and the this. So it works for, and that's probably why, if it was a longer film, we'd be like, oh, it was a little bit, you know, standard. But yeah, with these 11 ones, it really helps because it gives us that shortcut.
So the guy whose name is Red Doc or Red Jack or something like that.
It was Red. I just heard the Red and went, yeah. Do I know a character who's got Red in it? I don't know. No.
It's not like he's going to be here for long. So he's drinking at the bar and a lady of the night visits him and invites him upstairs.
Yeah.
However, before she even has to take off anything that's revealing, the guy gets killed, his money is taken, and the body disposed of by two henchmen.
It's very done and dusted.
Yeah. So we then get, about halfway into the movie, we get Jonah Hex
riding in town.
So he rides into town. You have people wincing at his appearance, even if they're looking at him from the side that's not horrifically scarred.
Maybe he smells bad.
So Jonah Hex is, imagine Clint Eastwood with half his face melted and you're not far off.
Yeah.
Certainly in this version, it's kind of, it's played very straight that he is just a straight cowboy. He's looking for Red Thingy.
Yeah, Red Thingy is what we all know who runs for that.
Yep, Red Guy. And he goes into the saloon from earlier. The barman doesn't know anything.
No, because barmen never know anything.
Yep. Oh, before that, someone tries to pick a fight with him and lasts 2 seconds.
Yeah. So you establish he's kick-ass.
Yeah. So Jonah Hex is then able to bribe someone into telling him, no, the guy's here. He disappeared. As many people do when they're met by Madame Lorraine. So
seems like a job for Jonah Hex.
Yep. So Madame Lorraine goes and visits Jonah. And you see that the henchmen are getting ready to attack. And, well, that doesn't... It doesn't go well.
Yeah, it doesn't... It's not... Yeah.
So he knocks out Madame Lorraine, kills the first guy very easily, then has a fight with the second guy, who ends up more scarred and burnt than Jonah Hex himself.
Yeah.
And then Hex finally kills the barman in a shootout, and then interrogates Lorraine.
Yeah.
And it turns out that she's just been putting bodies in the a mine shaft.
Because, I mean, if you're in the West and you've got a mine to hand, what better place to chuck your bodies in?
Absolutely. So, Lorraine is kind of forcibly lowered into the mine shaft with Jonah. And wouldn't you know it, one of the bodies has a knife stuck in it. So she tries to kill Jonah. And Jonah instead goes, fine, I'm leaving with the body that I need.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't worry, you're not going to be alone. You know everyone down there.
Which is true. I mean, like, fair, she put them all down there.
And he leaves her down a mine shaft with a bunch of rotting bodies. Which...
Once again, firmly establishing him as an anti-hero.
Absolutely. And that is the end of Jonah Hex. This one has quite an awesome cast I actually looked at. So you've got...
I noticed it as the credits went. I was like, oh my god, the cast is really good.
So Michael Rooker plays Red.
Yeah.
Linda Hamilton is Lorraine.
Yeah.
And Thomas Jane is playing...
I know, right?
Jonah Hex.
Great casting.
Jonah Hex appears in... is a bit more commonly used. He appears in The Flash in a kind of one of these sequences where the Flash is traveling through time.
Mm-hmm.
He features in a couple of episodes of Legends of Tomorrow.
So I hear. I've not watched as much of that as I would like to.
And also, I think he appears in Crisis on Infinite Earths. He has a he has an episode of Batman the Animated Series where he's featured. Ra's al Ghul tells a story about Jonah Hex in Batman the Animated Series. He also shows up in Justice League Unlimited.
Yeah.
The Brave and the Bold. Justice League Action.
Oh, he's in it quite a lot then.
He also was in Teen Titans Go to the Movies.
I really missed that, and I really did not pay attention to that film, it seems. And I saw it in the cinema, so that's like making me feel even worse.
There is a film called Blind Justice that was made by HBO that was claimed to have been heavily inspired by Jonah Hex.
Right.
And there was obviously... There was a Jonah Hex movie in 20... Actually, in 2010.
You know what? I haven't seen it, but I did know that, that existed.
With Josh Brolin as Jonah Hex.
Yeah. Free Thanos.
I'm sure that has, like... It either has, like, steampunk or magic or both.
Does it? Is that not Wild Wild West? Is that not... I mean, they feel about the same, but I don't know because I've not seen Jonah Hex.
All I know is that he has a minigun of some variety.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, that's what it is. Jonah Hex is revived by mystic powers from Native Americans.
Oh, ouch.
Yes.
I mean, to be fair, don't actually know what his origin is in the comics, and that could be a comics origin.
Yeah.
Like, so...
But it is a bit of that, we're talking about tropes.
It's definitely a big ouch, regardless. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying that I don't want to say that they made it worse for the film, because that could be his comics background, since I've no idea how he resurrected in the comics.
Yep.
So,
the final of the really short movies is Green Arrow.
Yeah, the only one I knew a little bit more about going into. Yeah. Oh, no, yeah, the short ones, yeah.
Yeah, this Green Arrow is quite significantly different from the Green Arrow I'm used to, because I'm used to Stephen Amell.
Yeah, I've not read many Green Arrow comics, but the ones I have read are very much like this one, so...
So he's very quippy, so he's very...
Yeah.
Green Arrow is probably the, out of the three here, probably the most well-known. You might even say, until last year, possibly even better known than Shazam as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so, because of the CW show.
Absolutely.
I mean, before that, who knows, but like definitely since then.
That said, this is an awesome cast this has got. So Neil McDonoghue plays Arrow himself.
Okay.
Who... quite funny since he played...
Yeah, he was a baddie in the series, right? Yeah.
Damien Dark, an Arrow villain. You've also got Malcolm McDowell as Merlin, Steve Bloom as Count Vertigo, Grey Lazelle as Black Canary, John DiMaggio shows up as one of the henchmen, and the kind of the rescue mission involved, which is the... Princess of a country that we never have named.
Because that way you don't get into trouble.
Who is voiced by Ariel Winter, who, see at first when the character spoke, I thought that it was the actress who played Starfire.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's Now, Ariel Winter does show up in one of the in a couple of films. The couple of films she shows up in is she plays Carrie Kelly in the adaptation of The Dark Knight Returns. But otherwise, we don't see her in this in any other films.
I mean, that kind of makes sense. She's not like her.
Yeah. But it's an awesome cast.
Yeah, no, it is a really good cast.
So, this is the only one of the films that kind of seems to be set in a kind of quasi-realistic setting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, this one seems directly taken out of the comics, but I think that's also to do with the fact that it doesn't. There's no real tropey setting you could chuck it in.
Yeah, so we're in an airport. Oliver Queen is looking to pick up Dinah Lance. He's not sure if he has if he has missed picking her up. So he goes to look at the taxi rank. And he doesn't find Dinah, but he does see a Merlin. Which he immediately goes, oh, okay, something's up then.
Yeah.
Because it can't just be that Merlin's coming home after a long, hard assassination mission. He has to be up to something. And wouldn't you know it, a princess is arriving at the airport.
Yeah, yeah. Cute little princess. Yep. So. But not annoyingly cute.
Yeah. So there is a attempt to kill the princess. For some reason, they shoot the guards before they shoot the princess, which, okay.
I mean, maybe they think the guards will be more of a. I mean, she is quite little and like unassuming.
Yeah.
So maybe they honestly think that she'll just be. Once they take the guards out, like they're the bigger risk. Yeah, I know, but I could see why they would think it.
But anyway, before they're able to kill the princess, the Green Arrow appears and is able to escape onto the runway with the princess. They then get fired upon by Merlin. An arrow gets shot in the leg. As the two of them start kind of fighting in a duel, it turns out that the princess is not actually the princess. She's now the queen because her father was assassinated by her uncle, Count Vertigo.
Very sad.
Arrow and the princess, so the queen, are then able to escape into the baggage conveyor belts, where Green Arrow has an extended fight with a henchman.
Yep. I quite like him. I like this Green Arrow.
Yeah.
I like goofy, fun, sweet Green Arrow.
Absolutely. We then have Arrow and Merlin have a straight duel. At which point Merlin mentions, oh, are you sure you want to do this? Since it would be the last 8 times we've done this, I've won.
Yeah.
But wouldn't you know, this time Green Arrow succeeds. And manages to simultaneously shoot through Merlin's arrow, cut his face, and then there's a gas grenade on the end of it which knocks Merlin out.
Yeah, which is cool. Gas grenade arrows. We approve.
I also like that this is a version of the arrow that doesn't kill. So Green Arrow is then attacked by Count Vertigo, who has some sort of sonic powers. However, before...
Which is great. I mean, I guess that's because it actually makes sense because Vertigo is what would give you... Is based... It's your ears, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Before he's able to kill the Queen and Arrow, Count Vertigo is attacked by Black Canary. And since he's already on his knees, Green Arrow decides this is the perfect time to propose.
Which is sweet. Oh, yeah, because right at the beginning, you do find out that he wants to propose.
Yeah.
So.
So that is the Green Arrow, and we get on to our final movie, and the longest movie here, and probably the main event, which is Shazam Superman, The Return of Black Adam.
Yeah, and we know it's the main event because it's, what, 24 minutes?
It is exactly 24 minutes. I think it's like 24 minutes and 3 seconds.
Just wanted to point out to everyone that I do pay a little bit of attention.
I think this was made back when it was still Captain Marvel as opposed to Shazam.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I still find it funny that we got 2 Captain Marvel movies in 2 months from 2 different companies.
Yeah.
We start the film with... Alright, so we start the film with a shooting star attacking a car for no discernible reason. And wouldn't you know it, it's Black Adam.
Yeah.
This time right. Played by Arnold Vosloo, who...
The Mummy.
Yeah, the Mummy.
I know my mummies.
I find it strange that a South African actor keeps on being cast as an Egyptian.
Yeah, right. And when you say strange, you mean Hollywood has no idea.
I mean, after Black Adam appears, we cut to a kid in a very run-down house.
Yeah, clearly in a bad way.
Clearly living on his own. But on the plus side, even though he's just tried to find some breakfast, he's getting his breakfast bought for him by Clark Kent.
Yes, which is sweet.
This version of Shazam, of Billy Batson Roller, he's not in the foster home, and his parents aren't around because superhero. It's not quite clear if it's the foster, either the foster home or his parents appear to be implied to be abusive at one point, I'm sure.
I don't know if I picked up that implication, but I'm sure it was probably there. I think it's just maybe I wasn't fully paying attention to every word.
Well, it's not word, it's more of
a... I mean, he's definitely in a bad way and he's definitely not having fun with his foster parent.
Yeah. So, before we can get too much dialogue about what's going on, Black Adam attacks. Because apparently he can tell who's been marked for
Shazamhood.
For Shazamhood. Oh, but on the way there, Billy tries to help a homeless guy.
Yes. Very important.
Yeah, it proves to be important. He gives the homeless guy a subway token.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I don't know why, I was going, oh, so he's going to get a sandwich then.
Yeah, I know, right? No, it did take me a second to be like, oh, that subway.
Yeah.
For any Americans listening, we don't call it the subway, generally.
We call it the underground.
Yeah, the underground, the tube, metro. Any of them are called subway.
That's the London one. The Glasgow one is just the underground. And
yeah, and the Newcastle one is the metro. Yeah. So there's a few, but like I just don't think any of them are subway.
I do love in Glasgow, it's the easiest subway in the world because see if you miss your station, if you wait 20 minutes, you'll be back at that station again.
Oh, is it just a circular one?
It's just a loop, yeah.
That's nice.
Black Adam and Superman fight because Clark Kent gets driven through several walls. So he decides to just go, okay, Superman. At no point does Shazam seem to work out that Clark Kent is Superman, and I don't think that Superman works out that Billy becomes Captain Marvel. Which is funny.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we have Adam and Superman fight, and it's clear that Superman is probably the stronger, not by much, But the Black Adam's match...
It's definitely a good fight. I mean, yeah. Like, you know, they're matched.
Absolutely. Whilst this is happening, Superman is trying to get Billy away, and it ends up finishing with Black Adam dropping a gigantic stone tower onto Superman.
So,
Billy is able to escape, and just as he's going past the subway, the homeless guy gives him a token for the subway back.
Yeah, and says, now you can take the subway. Made it more obvious which subway they meant.
Yeah. And not only that, it's kind of... You're kind of going, that's weird. Why would they set that up?
Yeah.
To which then, Billy ends up not on the train, but on the train tracks.
Yeah.
But thankfully, he's in one of those trains that manages to teleport you into them instead of hitting you.
Yeah. Which is alright.
And it's a train to a very special place.
It is.
As he ends up going to see Shazam. The Wizard. And the Seven Deadly Sins statues as well.
Yeah.
And we get the whole... So, this guy Black Adam, what happened is I gave him incredible power, and then it turns out he wasn't actually a good guy, so I kicked him into space.
Yeah.
And it took him 5,000 years to get back. I've decided to give you superpowers, because you're a good guy.
Yeah, that seems fair.
And that doesn't explain... Right, what you need to do is, if you say Shazam, you'll get powers. Instead, he just goes, call my name, and I'm going to die now.
Yeah, call my name when you need me kind of thing.
Now, if you just excuse me, this cave's going to collapse. So I'll teleport you back to where Superman is just recovering from having a tower dropped on him.
Yeah.
So... Billy then tries to punch out Black Adam.
I mean, yeah, that's a bit dumb. But I guess, like, what else are you going to do? You just got these powers, you don't know what to do with them.
Absolutely. So, thankfully, he does accidentally say the right phrase.
Yeah, just by talking, saying it out loud. He's just talking about it. Oh, like, thanks Shazam or something like that. Yeah.
And he then goes, oh, wow, I can fly, and I'm strong, and I'm big. Yeah.
So he goes through some of the powers for you, which is kind of good.
And even when he's only just learning his superpowers, he is able to at least hold his own in a fight with Adam.
Yeah, yeah.
He then goes, whilst flying over the ocean... And all I needed to do was say Shazam.
Yeah. It's great. It's kind of fun. It's a very good way of, like, showing it how, like, of showing how it works.
Yeah. And he also then... So he then shouts Shazam underwater and the bubbles come up to activate his powers.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a delay, but kind of cool.
So... Superman and Shazam then fight Black Adam.
Mm-hmm.
And what then happens is Black Adam decides, right, to keep them from working together, I'm going to break a dam. So Superman's busy trying to stop the river from flooding the city.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvel fights with Adam. Well, doesn't fight him. What Adam does instead is he grabs
just tries to stop him doing it.
Yeah, he grabs a hostage and says, "I will let this woman go if you turn back."
Yeah.
And wouldn't you know it, he's actually lying.
da, da, da. What a surprise.
Yeah, he throws the woman into the air and then grabs Billy's mouth before he can turn back. Thankfully, Superman appears.
Yeah.
And goes, "You didn't know I have cold breath, do you?"
Yeah, he goes, "I've got something you don't have."
And apparently, off screen, Superman is able to freeze an entire river with his breath.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
So, Superman and Adam fight. Captain Marvel, Shazam, is able to take control of the fight, and he has Adam completely beat. He's about to kill him when Superman goes, "I really wish you wouldn't do that."
Yeah, please don't do that.
And then the homeless guy shows up.
Yeah, which is cool.
And it turns out he's actually a...
talking tiger.
Yeah, he's a magical talking tiger.
Yes.
Talkie Tawny.
Yeah, Talkie Tawny. I was kind of kind of joking by calling him Talkie Tiger, but it is Talkie Tawny, yeah. Yeah, whatever.
Who doesn't appear... he doesn't appear in the live-action film, but apparently a giant tiger toy does, which is meant to be a reference.
Yeah, I think people are hoping he'll be in the next one. Because he's such a big deal. I don't really know much about Captain Marvel / Shazam.
Yep, So he then goes... Right, Black Adam, since obviously 5,000 years doesn't work, we're just going to do the exact same thing, but it's going to be 10,000 years this time.
Yeah, see ya.
So Black Adam decides instead to commit suicide.
Yeah, which is a bit of a downer, but you know.
But so he basically... says Shazam, and ages 5,000 years in 2 seconds.
Seconds, yeah.
So, we then cut to Billy Batson reading the newspaper, because Clark Kent's written a story about him.
Yay!
And the punks earlier come to threaten Billy and go, "Just say one word. And we can guess what word he says."
Yeah, I mean, because it makes sense.
Yeah. And that is the last of the showcases.
I think pretty good.
So, yeah, all four of them, I think we were quite fond of all of them.
Yeah, I think it's such a shame we didn't get more of them.
Yeah. Well, there are more of them, but they don't come out... So there's more of them attached to some of the later movies, so...
Yeah, I just meant it's a shame we didn't get any longer ones of these guys.
Yeah. So we'll probably do another one of these later on, featuring Sergeant Rock, Death, the Phantom Stranger, and Adam Strange.
Okay.
Which...
interesting.
Which we can do... later on night. We might do them just before Apocalypse War.
Okay.
And then, technically speaking, the only other two movies on this title is there's a Catwoman film attached to Batman Year One, which is basically a mini sequel to the film. And Death in the Family is under this label as well. Which was still...
okay.
It's not quite clear if they're going to do anything with it in terms yeah. of what we're going to do, if we're going to cover it or not.
Right, yeah.
I'm just having a look at it. There was talk, though it didn't look like there was any attempt to do anything more with Jonah Hex, the Spectre, or There's not. I don't think there's another film that features Shazam. Alan live action, obviously. There was talk about doing a Green Arrow film, which I think was the him being put in a maximum security prison with a bunch of villains. But that fell through. Yeah, so that is. But that's the end of the showcase.
So, yeah, I really like them. I wish they did more of these things and experimented a bit more with some of their less known characters.
I mean, at least we can see from the other four, it's a lot more obscure characters than that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
the next film we've got coming up means that we're on to three Superman films in a row.
Oh my god.
Because it is All-Star Superman.
Oh, right. Okay, interesting. It's been a long time since I've read that.
Which, the only scene I know about that is, I think at some point, Lex Luthor gets Superman powers.
Yes.
Because it's based on All-Star Superman by Grant Morrison.
Yeah, and the comic I found that everyone will quite happily tell you is like one of their favourite Superman comics ever. It's really good, but if you haven't read a lot of Superman, I find it quite confusing.
Right.
Because there's a few narrative jumps where you kind of have to know these things have happened. But it is really good and really well written. It's just that's the only reason it doesn't rank up there as my favourite.
Yeah.
Because I got really confused about things like the Lex's Superman powers.
So, yeah. There are two more films that were made in 2011 we'll be covering. Green Lantern Emerald Knights, which is a compilation of six stories. And we have our first Frank Miller adaption with Batman Year One.
Right. That'd be fun. That'd be quite interesting.
So,
a bit of Green Lantern, a bit of...
It also means that we're actually in the start of a three-episode run where we have no Batman.
Wow. Won't last, but wow.
I think it's about the longest we go without Batman.
I'm sure it is. I mean, it has to be. It's like this is DC. I mean, and he is like their most recognisable character that isn't Superman, but they don't tend to use Superman the same way.
Yeah. Anyway, that is... thank you very much for listening to the DCAU podcast.
Yeah.
You can follow us on Twitter at DCAU podcast or email us at DCAUpodcast@yahoo.com.
Yep, do it.
We also appear on a few other podcasts. So I also appear on the Rise of the Robots podcast. We're just about to start our coverage of Robot Wars Series 4 from the early 2000s.
Very exciting.
And I believe you said that later today you're going to be recording an Immortal Iron Fist episode?
I'm doing, we're doing just one, but Immortal Iron Fist, Son of the Dragon podcast. Sons of the Dragon podcast. We're doing issue 75 of Power Man and Iron Fist, our big anniversary one. So.
Hooray!
Hooray!
Alright.
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you for listening to the DCAU podcast. You can follow us on social media. We are at DCAU podcast on Twitter. Or you can email in to us with either feedback on our show or on the movies we're about to watch at dcaupodcast@yahoo.com. The DCAU podcast is protected under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike 4.0 International License. Thank you for listening.